What a scripture to be the focus of a message on that Hallmark holiday, Grandparents' Day. Unless you hate your parents. Of course, it doesn't include grandparents in that list, you notice. You've heard the one about how grandparents and children have a common enemy. Parents. This is an extremely difficult scripture to preach on. And you know what? I have never preached on it. I went back on Tuesday. It was Tuesday when I was trying to decide what I was going to preach on, because, you know, Monday was Labor Day. And I realized that Philemon was one of the other texts, and I had preached on that the last three times this cycle came around. I don't like this text. It's a rough one. Furthermore, as I was trying to decide on Tuesday, I got a call from Joanne telling me that woman that I look to as kind of a little bit of a mother figure myself, since my own mother's gone, had a stroke. I didn't like the scripture as I was doing it, but I felt a need to preach on it. Sometimes we preach about the things we struggle with, and this is one. Now, I know I've done a lot of reading on this particular text, and I hear most commentators saying that Jesus, as he is speaking this, is using a device called hyperbole. Anybody know what hyperbole means? Well, in case you don't, I went to Webster's Dictionary and looked it up, and the best definition I found of it was extravagant exaggeration. Extravagant exaggeration. So Jesus was exaggerating here. Does that mean he was exaggerating when he said elsewhere, love your enemy? Gotta wonder. I mean, that's a literary device, hyperbole. When does it apply? And I turned to others, and, you know, they were describing that Jesus was, especially in Luke's gospel, if you read Luke's gospel, you know that a large portion of that gospel, Jesus has his face set towards Jerusalem. And as he's going, kind of all sorts of followers, great crowds are following him along. I mean, there he is with, you know, his intimate band, and you could almost say this is a gospel that's told on the run, or I guess on the walk, if you would. And as they're talking, most of the people are behind. And so he's talking, they probably don't hear an awful lot of what's happening and what he's saying. But at this particular point, it says at the beginning, if you were listening, he turned to everybody. And he said these words to everybody. And they kept following. And they kept following. Interesting. Also have to keep in mind some things, that these gospels that we have received sort of moved in various different circles. These gospels were told, not first, you know, they weren't, I mean, Luke, remember, wasn't one of the original 12. Luke wrote his down many years after the fact. In fact, he, if you were listening in the letter to Philemon, he was one of the ones mentioned as being in Paul's entourage. Luke, we know, is a physician. So Luke is recording these words later on. And they were intended for a church that was, or a people who were sort of in the process of becoming. You know, already the people of who the followers of Jesus were encountering opposition. And so these words meant something to the first ones who heard these words as recorded by Luke. And remember, Luke is the only one that puts it this way. Matthew is, you know, mentions that statement of Jesus, but Matthew does not use the word hate. Matthew says those who do not love me more than. But literally, Luke uses the word hate. Hyperbole. Extravagant exaggeration. Another word I discovered when I looked it up in Webster's dictionary is another word for this, you know, that word extravagant is prodigal. Prodigal exaggeration. And that whole opens up to me a whole nother story, doesn't it? Because we know a story of a father relating to a son who had extravagantly wasted his inheritance and went out. And as the young fellow turns back home, you see another form of prodigality, of extravagance. As a father who should be reticent to receive back a son, welcomes him with open arms. But you also know there's more to that story, isn't there? Because there's a brother involved who doesn't think too highly of all of this. And especially his younger sibling who had wasted everything he had been given and being extravagantly welcomed back home. Extravagant exaggeration. Things we probably should keep in mind as we're listening to this is, you know, the setting. And I think we have some insights to, you know, kind of some cultures that existed back then when we hear in some Arab countries of families that where the honor of the family is more important than life itself. Where in a lot of cases it's young women who get educated or young women who choose different paths or just do something out of the norm are killed. They call it honor killing because the honor of the family means more than the life of that person. And just imagine living back in that era, perhaps with that kind of culture in existence. You know, and you in that Mediterranean world that, you know, Paul, the Apostle Paul took the gospel out to, if you were living in and had received the good news and what it took to follow Jesus meant that you were turning your back on your family. What all that involves. Now, I'd still say, you know, having admitted all that, that I don't like what Jesus said about hating father, mother, sister, brother. Unless, of course, it's an exaggeration. Getting us to think. And maybe when Jesus turned to all those crowds, he was fully aware of what the road ahead was going to involve. You know, for him, there was a lot of hatred piled upon. Hate that was piled so high that it sort of formed the shape of a cross upon which he was killed. But herein, you know, in this whole bit about counting the cost, there's a costliness, as the rest of this particular passage indicates, there's a costliness to following Jesus. And sometimes, you know, it involves kind of turning your back on things that you had been taught growing up. Like, for instance, a fellow by the name of Philemon. He was raised in a culture where slavery was a given. It's not all that distant in our own culture, you know. Slavery was a given back then. And here he had a slave who ran away. And in the process of running away, it also stole him. And I bet every ounce of his being was kind of connected with his upbringing about this, you know? You got to do what you got to do. You know, this person, you can't allow this to happen. And the person belongs back. He had a debt to pay, and By golly, you know, if he comes back, he's going to get what's due to him. Except he receives this peculiar letter from Paul that calls him to turn his thinking upside down. And instead of receiving back a slave, he is called to receive back a brother. You know, that little letter of Philemon, my friends, was very influential about 150 years ago when our own country was going through this whole slavery bit. And you know, if there hadn't been persons who were willing to kind of turn back their back on some things that weren't right and say so, we'd still be living in a society where slavery is a given. Likewise, was it 50 years ago, if there weren't persons who were willing to part with the past, the way it had always been, the way they had been raised to see the world, you know, that colored people belong in the back of the bus, we'd still be living in that kind of society. Think about that. Think about that. Now, I can't end without noting that this particular passage in Luke's gospel comes in a context. It always does. Luke has a particular purpose in locating things where they are. You know what comes before this particular passage in Luke's gospel? There's that story of a banquet. A banquet where somebody sends out invitations. And all these people say, "Nah, I can't come to the banquet. I've got to do this or that or the next thing." No doubt many of them were family. And so the person who had been going to all this trouble of preparing this banquet and all says, "Okay, well, let's go out and get others to come in." So there's that immediately precedes this. And what follows, you know, there's discussion of salt, a few words that Jesus had to say about being the salt of the earth. And then there's a story, a parable he told, the lost sheep. And how the shepherd, when he knows that one sheep is lost, turns and kind of puts the 99 over here and goes out in search of that one lost sheep. And maybe that's exaggeration right there too. Because I think, you know, how do you put aside taking care of the majority for the needs of the minority, the one? But it's important. And as we, you know, think about a text which calls us to be intentional about our love and put God, Jesus, at the top and ourselves way back down the line and get our priorities in order and count the cost, that in the economy of God, the ones we may perceive, even our loved ones who are left behind, the shepherd does not forget. The shepherd will keep reaching out and going out after. So that I got to believe, my brothers and sisters, that this statement is not about hate. It is about fierce, extravagant love. The love of God that is edging us, nudging us, cajoling us, pushing us toward the kingdom. May the Lord bless you as you ponder this.